Chapter 12. I was wrong. I was not prepared for the gnarls. I shrieked the moment I stepped through the door, grabbing onto Nick as if my life depended on it. Which it did, because we were upside down. Thank God Nick had faster reactions than I did. He took one look at the swirling abyss we were falling into and grabbed the wall, anchoring us in place as the floor became the ceiling and my feet lost contact with the ground. I flipped twice before he yanked me back onto something firm. When I finally pried my eyes open again, I was standing on the arch at the top of the cathedral's doorway, staring out into the strangest landscape I'd ever seen. The only word I could think of to describe it was suspended. We were standing at the entrance of the wandering cathedral, which was floating in the space between two terrifying extremes. Below us, in the place I'd thought of as up when I'd stepped out of the cathedral, was the terrifying abyss Nick had saved me from falling into. Above us, off the steps of the upside-down cathedral, were the roots of the city itself. "Wow," I whispered, clutching even more tightly onto Nick's coat. The bottom of the DFC was suspended above us like a chandelier. From this angle, there was no dirt at all. I could see every pipe and tunnel and basement in the city all tangled together, like the roots of a tree or the wires of a machine. It was hard to say which it resembled more closely, because the city above us was both. Manufactured and organic. Inanimate and animate. Dead and alive. It was a cement that moved like water, and trees that stood firm as anchors. Both seemed equally important, because the bottom of the city above us was moving quite a lot, pivoting around the solid points like muscles around a joint. Just in the time I stood there gawking, I saw two roads and a support beam slide beneath a building to push it up, adding a few floors to the bottom. At the same time, the foundations of Highway 94 wiggled a bit to the left, adjusting a hard curve ever so slightly wider, while the buildings on either side leaned away to make room. "Wow," I said again, my face breaking into an awestruck grin. "Look at that! It's like we're in the DFZ's backstage!"
"Yes, yes, it's very impressive," Nick said quickly. "But how do we get down?"
Considering down was an endless abyss, that struck me as a funny question. But we had to go somewhere. The cathedral we were clinging to was basically an asteroid slowly revolving through the emptiness between two worlds. Not exactly a great starting spot for a search.
"What does your hand say?"
Nick scowled at his right-left hand, which I'd only just now realized was still resting on my waist from when he'd grabbed me earlier. I was no longer in danger of falling, but he didn't seem to be in a hurry to move it, tapping his fingers softly against my bunched-up poncho as he considered my question.
"It's actually calmed down a lot since we got in here," he said at last,
leaning out slowly to get a better look at the nothing below us.
"It's not jumping around anymore. It's just pointing down."
Down was not a direction I wanted to go.
"Great," I moaned. "Dr. Lyle dropped his spell into the abyss."
"It's not all abyss," Nick said, leaning further over the edge. "Look."
I did not want to look. I wasn't normally afraid of heights, but clinging to a cathedral floating above an endless void was definitely extenuating circumstances. Now that I was no longer jacked up on the fear of plummeting to my death, I could feel the magic rising out of the void in waves. It was as thick as cement, and stronger than anything I'd ever felt on the surface. The only thing I could compare it to was dragon fire, and I'd only had the misfortune of feeling that once. But that fire had been brief and directed. This magic was everywhere at once, a waterfall of power pouring up from the abyss toward the city. Even with the cathedral blocking some of it, the power of the magic roaring by was enough to rattle my soul inside my body like a nut in its shell. And Nick wanted me to stick my head over the edge? Just the thought made my stomach lurch,
If I hadn't paid so dearly for them, I would have vomited up every pancake I'd eaten. But I had. So I didn't. Gallantly keeping my breakfast down as I took off my goggles and held them out over the edge to see what Nick was talking about. Even secondhand through my cameras, the void was all I could see at first. There was just so much of it. An endless, swirling darkness that was bigger than the sky. Bigger than anything I'd ever seen. Just trying to fit it all in my head made me feel like something was going to break. So I stopped attempting and focused instead on finding something that wasn't boundless nothing. That went much better. It took a while, but once I started ignoring the void, other things began to take shape. And I realized that Nick was right. There was stuff down there. Roads and bridges. Buildings. City parks with playgrounds in them. Whole portions of the DFZ were floating in the space between the city and the abyss like lost puzzle pieces. They looked like independent islands, free-floating objects similar to the cathedral we were clinging to. The longer I stared, though, the more I realized that wasn't entirely true. There was a cloud of smaller debris connecting the larger masses, a root-like network of old pipes and steel rebar that formed a definite, if very twisty, path. "I see why it's called the Gnarls now," I said, returning my goggles to the top of my head. "Think we can get down there?"
"We'll have to," Nick said, releasing his grip on my waist at last to point his right-left hand at a particularly dense cluster of discarded land masses. "It's that way."
"You sure?"
"I have no idea, but the hand is absolutely positive. The thing we're looking for is 2.3 kilometers in that direction."
I gave him a puzzled look.
"Breaking out the metric now?"
"It's not my fault,"
he said angrily, shaking Dr. Lyle's hand.
"It's this stupid thing. It wants me to be precise, and it thinks metric is the superior system."
"Well, to be fair, it is," I agreed. "But I thought that hand didn't have an interface you could communicate with."
"So did I," Nick growled. "But apparently it doesn't need words to make its opinion known now that we're used to each other."
I couldn't help myself.
"So you're saying you can talk to the hand?"
The look Nick gave me then was absolutely scalding. But I didn't regret a thing. No matter how serious the situation, a good pun is never a waste. It certainly cheered me up, which was good, because I'd been clinging to Nick like a wet napkin this whole time. If we were going to make any distance, much less 2.3 kilometers, I needed to get myself together. "Okay," I said, releasing my death grip on Nick's jacket. "Let's do this." It took almost half an hour to figure out how we were going to get down. To my enormous surprise, Sybil's signal wasn't bad down here. In hindsight, it made sense that wireless internet would be part of the DFC's heart. She was a modern city, after all. But it didn't actually help our situation. I found plenty of guides online, but they all turned out to be useless, since the Gnarls were apparently different every time you went in. That wasn't too out there, considering we were inside the magical heart of the god of an ever-moving city. But it meant there was no easy solution to our current predicament. After a bit of watching, though, we noticed that the wandering cathedral had its own path through the chaos, almost like an orbit. It wasn't much, but with Sybil's ability to keep track of multiple relative positions and a lot of patience, I was able to chart a course. After that, it was just a matter of waiting for the right moment. We spent the time climbing down, or up, the cathedral's ornate face to the bell tower, which was much closer to the floating islands below, above us. We sat there for a while, watching the islands moving like clouds above the void. Then, when one of the biggest pieces of disconnected highway was directly below us, we jumped, falling together through the chaos. Much, much later than I'd anticipated, we landed on the pavement. I didn't actually break my leg, but from the horrifying crunch my knee made, it was a near thing. Ow. I groaned, sinking to the ground. That was a lot farther than I thought.
I just hope we can get back, Nick said, holding out his actual left hand, the one that wasn't cybernetic, to help me up. Jumping's a lot harder than falling.
We'll cross that bridge when we get there, I said, hauling myself to my feet. Now, which way do we go?
Nick pointed to his right without hesitation, and we set off, walking down the stretch of floating highway as though it were a normal road. Not a slowly rotating plane of asphalt hanging in air over an abyss that was pouring itself upward toward the city like an upside-down magical version of Victoria Falls.
You know, I said, staring at the void that was now above us again thanks to relative orientation. When they said the Gnarls were the overlap between the DFC's physical and magical domains, I didn't think the truth would be quite so literal. I'm pretty sure that's the actual sea of magic above our heads. As in the realm of spirits, source of all magic, and the places our souls go when we die.
I don't want to think about dying right now, Nick replied,
keeping his eyes firmly on the asphalt.
I just want to get what we're here for and get out of this madhouse.
I wonder what would happen if we fell into it, I went on. I've always heard that humans can't take the other side. The magic is too intense, so our souls get ripped to shreds. We're still technically inside the DFZ, though, so do you think we can actually fall out? Like, is there a bottom we're not seeing? Or would we just plummet endlessly until the magic dissolved our opal?
Nick said sharply, his face pale and tight.
Not helping.
I apologized at once, but the question stuck with me. It wasn't every day you found yourself face to face with the literal great beyond.
The Sea of Magic was where all the magic in the world originated and eventually returned to, including the magic inside of us. The soul of every person who'd ever died was somewhere in that darkness. Staring at it, I was glad that Peter had committed Dr. Lyle to the empty wind. Spending the rest of eternity tumbling with other forgotten souls on a grave cold wind didn't exactly sound like a party. But what did I know? I'd never been dead. At least he had someone who cared watching over him. That had to be better than falling into that void alone. True to their name, the Gnarls were incredibly confusing. Everything was always spinning, and the connecting lines of pipes and cement never seemed to lead where you thought they would. Even with Nick's unerring sense of direction, we had to backtrack a lot. A frustrating complication that was only made worse by Nick's habit of constantly looking over his shoulder.
Would you stop? I pleaded, pointing at the broken archipelago of spinning oaks we were currently trying to navigate through.
This is complicated enough without you constantly throwing off my sense of which direction is forward.
Sorry, he said, rubbing the back of his neck. It's just...
Just what?
Nothing,
he said with a sigh.
This place messes with me is all. I keep getting the feeling that we're being followed.
He said that like he was embarrassed about it. But I'd always trusted my instincts, and Nick had saved my bacon enough times recently that I was developing a near-religious faith in his. If he said someone was following us, I absolutely believed it. When I turned to search, though, all I saw was the empty corkscrew of pipes and wires we'd followed to get here. Scowling, I pulled my goggles down from my head.
Sybil.
Don't ask me,
my AI grumbled as my augmented reality filled with error icons.
This place is a nightmare. I've still got internet somehow, but there's no GPS, and the magic's so thick it's messing with my electronics. I feel like one giant glitch.
Sorry, I said automatically, walking back to the last bend we'd turned. But this isn't complicated. I just need you to play back the last few minutes of footage from my rear cameras. Anything you've got will be... I stopped. I couldn't say what had set it off, but I had that prickly feeling on the back of my neck again. The one that meant I was being watched. It was the same feeling I'd had yesterday. The one that had come seconds before my anti-bullet ward had caught the shot aimed at my head. That was enough for me. I hit the deck without thinking twice, diving face first into the piebald grass of the small patch of park we'd been walking through. Above me, I heard Nick curse and draw his gun, which would have been a good move if we'd been looking in the right direction. But we weren't. Our eyes were level with the chunk of grassy field we'd been walking across, but the threat came from above. Something we discovered the hard way when it landed right on top of us. Ugh! I grunted as something heavy and wearing boots landed on my back. Nick's sound of surprise was a lot more profane as he was knocked to the ground beside me. Gun wrenched out of his hand by a very large man in the distinctive black body armor of a professional mercenary. I had no idea which company the small logo on his arm was for. I only paid attention to body armor when I was trying to resell it, but I recognized a pro when he was shoving my face into the dirt. Considering we had bounties on our heads, the fact that we'd been jumped by mercs wasn't actually what surprised me. My big question was, how had they found us here? Fortunately, or unfortunately, as it turned out, I didn't have to be curious for long.
"Well, well, Mr. Koss," said a familiar voice. "You certainly lived up to your reputation this time."
I groaned, grinding my face into the grass. "Of course. Of course. Who else could it be?" I didn't even know why I'd bothered to wonder as I craned my neck back to see Kaufman standing on a chunk of floating cement above us. The only thing I still didn't understand was... how? Kaufman reached into his pocket and pulled out a plastic baggie holding a tissue stained a dull coppery red.
"You should be more careful where you bleed, Miss Yonge."
His normally dazzling smile spreading into something much more sinister.
"You did a good job burning off your material links. But it's all for nothing if you're going to drip bits of yourself all over the heights."
He tisked at me.
"Absolutely amateur."
The truth of those words burned like a hot poker in my gut. How could I have been so stupid? I'd been bleeding like a faucet after I'd blasted that scaffolding last night. Of course I'd dripped something on the ground. Which meant I'd basically handed Kaufman a leash and invited him to yank it. Blood was the strongest of all material links. You could trace a person from anywhere in the world with it. Including, apparently, through the gnarls. That wasn't the only way Kaufman had outmaged me, either. While he was gloating, I noticed that the floating cement chunk he was standing on was covered in spellworked circles. Now I really felt like an idiot. Kaufman and his hired muscle hadn't just floated over our heads by accident. He'd used spellwork to catch the magic that was roaring up from the void and tie it to the rock he was standing on. No wonder he'd been able to catch up with us. He'd turned that hunk of cement into his own private sailboat. While we'd been wandering the gnarls, he'd been flying wherever he liked, riding the constant roar of magic like a sailor at sea. If I hadn't screwed us so epically, I would have been impressed by his inventiveness. But I mostly just wished I'd thought of it first. Now we were sunk. Stuck on our stomachs with four mercs on our backs and Kaufman floating over us smirking like he was the spirit of bad winners.
"I don't suppose the offer to buy us out is still on the table?" Nick asked, turning his face against the boot the merc on top of him was pressing into his cheek.
Kaufman shook his head.
"I'm afraid that ship has sailed, old friend. The only deal I can offer you now is the chance to get out of this alive. Now,"
his eyes flicked to me,
"let me speak to Dr. Lyle."
Nick and I shared a confused look. "What?"
"Let me speak to Dr. Lyle,"
Kaufman repeated, his voice growing frustrated.
"I know you have to be in communication with him. Because it's the only way you can know where you're going. Coordinates don't work in this place. The only way to find a fixed point down here is with a beacon spell. And that's tied to Dr. Lyle's magic. I know this because he showed me how he was planning to do it right before he bolted with our employer's investment. So stop playing stupid and let me talk to him. If he agrees to guide me to the ritual location, we'll have no more reason to quarrel. I'll tell my men to stop hunting for his safe house. Our employer will recoup his investment, and you get to avoid having a bullet put through your skull. Everybody gets what they want. Now hand him over.
He ended with a deadly glare at me. But all I could do was gape. My God, I thought. He still doesn't know. Kaufman had only come after me when his goons had seen me cleaning Dr. Lyle's robbed house, but he'd never found out about the first apartment. I thought for sure he must have figured it out by now, but apparently he hadn't done much digging into my past, because he still didn't know Dr. Lyle was dead. He thought the poor man was still cowering in his basement safe house, guiding us by remote. I snapped my mouth shut, holding Kaufman's eyes as I scrambled to think this through. I couldn't do as Kaufman wanted because Dr. Lyle was dead. If I told him that, though, it would only take a few educated guesses for him to figure out Nick was using Dr. Lyle's hand. Once he knew that, he'd just take it for himself. We'd already done the hard work of cracking the security, and while Kaufman probably didn't have any cybernetics as a mage, one of his mercs almost certainly did. He'd take everything if I let him. But unlike Nick, I wasn't in this for the big score. I just needed enough money to pay my dad, which meant I had room to bluff. "How about this?" I said, giving Kaufman a sweet smile from under the merc's boot. "Dr. Lyle is never going to tell you where he hid his ritual because he hates you. But if you get your guys off us, I will. Let Nick and me go, and we'll guide you straight to the ritual site, where we'll split what we find 50-50. That way everyone gets a piece, and no one has to get nasty. Deal?"
"No deal," Nick yelled, shooting me a furious look. "Don't offer him my money." "Why would I split anything with you?" Kaufman said at the same time. "I have all the power, and that ritual was financed by my employer, which means everything it created belongs to us. You had your chance to cash out, but you threw it away. Your window for negotiation ended yesterday. The only options left to you now are my way, or that way."
He pointed over the edge of his rock down at the swirling abyss, and my stomach curled into a knot. Before I could think of another angle, though, Nick spoke over me.
"So what you're saying is it's all or nothing." "You get to keep your lives," Kaufman said with a shrug. "That's not nothing. But if you keep trying to stall, I'm not above killing someone to speed things along. Probably you. Since if Theo Lyle was going to entrust a stranger with his life's work, he'd be far more likely to pick the pretty mage."
He smiled at Nick.
"Nothing personal, Nicola. Just business. You know how it is."
The look Nick gave him then made me sink into the ground. I'd seen him get angry plenty of times now, mostly at me, but I'd never seen him look like that.
"I do know,"
Nick said in a voice so cold even Kaufman flinched.
"Glad we have an understanding." "Yes,"
Kaufman said, reaching up to wipe away the drop of sweat sliding down his temple.
"But this can all be avoided if you'll just—"
He never got to finish. He barely started talking when Nick ripped his right arm out from under the mercenary's metal-toed boot and swung it up, rotating his shoulder an inhuman 90 degrees in its socket to shoot the man holding him. Since Nick's gun was still on the grass beside him, I didn't see how that was possible. Then I saw Dr. Lyle's hand hit the dirt, and I understood. Nick had a secret gun inside his false arm. He'd ejected Dr. Lyle's hand so he wouldn't destroy it, and then he'd shot the man holding him down by surprise. I could still see the wisp of smoke rising from the stump of his wrist as the merc fell sideways, screaming and clutching his shoulder, which was bleeding from the bottom where Nick had nailed him in the armpit, threading the needle through the tiny gap where the chest and the arm portions of his body armor came together. It was a perfect shot, one I couldn't have made if I'd had an hour to aim, let alone in a snapshot from the ground while I was trapped on my stomach. I was still marveling at it when Nick kicked straight up off the ground like it was nothing to plant his boot in the second guard's knee, dislocating the joint with a sickening pop. Again, it was perfect. He'd done the whole thing in one lightning-fast motion, ending up on his feet before either of the men who'd been holding him could hit the ground. I'd never seen anyone move that fast aside from my father. But Nick was no dragon. He was worse. The Dragon of Korea fought with dignity and grace, always giving his opponents at least the pretense of a chance. Nick didn't even give the guard on my back time to gasp before he launched forward and punched him in the throat, sliding his left hand deftly between the man's helmet and chest plate to nail him in the windpipe. The weight on my back vanished as the merc holding me down flew backward. To my left, the man who'd had his gun pointed at my face snatched it up in an effort to catch Nick. He must have been wired something fierce, because he almost managed to get a shot off before Nick slammed the stump of his cybernetic arm into the merc's clear plexiglass faceplate, crushing it into the man's nose. By this point, I was shaking all over from a cocktail of emotions. Fear was there, definitely, and triumph, but what I felt most was awe. I'd known Nick was good, but I'd had no idea he was that good. What I'd witnessed went way beyond street tough cleaner. I didn't even have words for the way Nick moved. Beauty almost fit, as did grace. But those words were too clean, too nice for the savage, tyrannical efficiency of the way he continued to punch past its natural end, slamming the man into the ground beside me with so much force that the whole floating island tilted. But even that wasn't enough. When the last merc dropped his gun, Nick snatched it off the ground with his remaining left hand and fired, planting a bullet in the mercenary's dominant hand before he could even get it to his bleeding face. He did the others next, turning and shooting the soldiers for hire in the hands they'd used to hold their guns so they couldn't pick them back up again. He'd just finished the last one when something fell over me. It felt like an avalanche. We'd been in the Gnarls for a while now, and while my body would never get used to the constant pounding magic here, it had stopped taking up all of my attention. Watching Nick during the fight, I'd been too awestruck to even think about it. A stupid blunder, in hindsight, because there was one enemy Nick's perfect storm of violence couldn't reach. And his magic grabbed me like a giant hand, yanking me off the ground and 10 feet straight up, where Kaufman was waiting with a gun of his own.
"Stop!"
he ordered, shoving the short pistol's steel barrel into the hollow below my chin.
"Now!"
The words cut through the violence like knives. And Nick stopped, kicking the groaning merc at his feet one last time before craning his head back to glare at Kaufman.
"You don't want to play this game with me,"
he said quietly, slinging the blood off his fingers.
"Let her go." "I'm not the one playing,"
Kaufman snarled back, grimacing at the soldiers Nick had so efficiently taken out.
"It seems the rumors were wrong. You haven't gone soft at all, have you, mad dog?"
"Don't call me that," Nick snarled.
"And your hired muscle is still alive. I'd say that's pretty soft." "Maybe by your standards," Kaufman said, his gun shaking against my skin. "But you're not the only one after a big score."
His eyes flicked down to Dr. Lyle's hand on the ground. Nick's did too, and his body tensed. For the first time, though, he wasn't fast enough. I barely had time to recognize the suffocating feel of Kaufman's magic before it reached down and crushed the hand on the ground, breaking it into a million pieces.
"No!"
I screamed, lurching against his hold. Kaufman yanked me right back.
"The next one will be your head,"
he said, keeping his gun on me while his eyes watched Nick, who was staring at the destroyed hand as if he couldn't believe what had just happened.
"Are you listening to me? Let me talk to Dr. Lyle, Now!
You idiot! I yelled, kicking him in the shins as hard as I could. That was Dr. Lyle!
He dug the pistol harder into the underside of my jaw.
Shut up, he growled. I have more writing on this job than you can possibly know.
Then you should have paid more attention to current events, Nick said furiously.
Your doctor is dead. We've been following what's left of his location spell, which was inside the hand you just destroyed.
I felt Kaufman's body stiffen. And then he squeezed my neck so hard he almost choked me out.
You're lying.
When have I ever needed to lie to you? Nick demanded, crossing his arms over his chest.
You just played yourself, jackass. Now we're all screwed.
We'll see about that, Kaufman said, his voice taking on a final lethal-sounding edge.
I'm not going to be led around by the two of you again.
I felt the gun click as Kaufman tightened his finger on the trigger.
Even you're not fast enough to beat a bullet, he growled at Nick. So if you care about the well-being of your new partner in petty crime, you're going to drop the act and take me to Dr. Lyle's ritual site. You have 5 seconds.
Nick's jaw tightened. Mine did too, but not for the same reason. He looked frustrated and scared, but I was furious. Furious at these idiots for attacking us. Furious at Kaufman for destroying my only shot at getting free of my dad. Furious at this whole stupid situation. Most of all, though, I was furious at myself. I'd been doing nothing but screw up since yesterday when Nick had had to save me from getting shot. I'd lost all my money, been played by my dad, and sacrificed my very last penny only to lose it all because Kaufman was too stupid to know when a bluff wasn't a bluff. Now he was princessing me to get back the very thing he'd just destroyed. And I couldn't do anything about it. I was the weakest link in this whole fiasco. The reason Kaufman had found us in the first place. I hadn't felt this powerless since I'd left my father's house. Unlike back then, though, I was free to do something about it here. The only question was what? Even shaking with rage, I wasn't stupid. Kaufman had a gun, and he was hands down the better mage. Now that I was inside his circles, I could feel why he'd yet to leave his floating rock. In addition to the inherent advantage of height, he'd ringed this thing with a fortress's worth of wards. Even if Nick decided I wasn't worth the trouble and shot at him, the bullets would never get through. So long as he stayed inside his circles, Kaufman could probably take a missile to the face and come out okay. But though he'd outmaneuvered, outgunned and outmaged me in every possible way, there was still one place where I was still champion. One thing no one could beat me at. I could out-crazy anybody.
Opal, Sybil whispered in my ear. Opal, don't!
Opal did. With zero concern for my body or the gun pushing into it, I threw myself forward and reached with everything I had, diving into the roaring magic like I was diving off a cliff. The resulting shock of power nearly fried me on the spot. If I'd been trying to channel it or grab it or any of the things mages normally did, it would have. But I wasn't. I'd given up the pretense of proper magic. I had no circle, no spell work, no careful logical system to bend the magic to my will. All I cared about was volume. So I turned my soul into a conduit, letting the magic flow through my soul as fast as it liked into the carefully constructed circles Kaufman had been stupid enough to bring me inside. As it happened, my only regret was that due to the way I'd lunged forward, I couldn't see Kaufman's face anymore.
I would have given anything to see his expression as the uncontrolled magic crashed into his circles like a fire hose into a teacup. If they'd been my circles, they would have popped instantly. But Kaufman was a legitimately skilled mage. His finely wrought chain of interwoven circles lasted a good 5 seconds before the whole thing blew apart, sending out a shockwave that set every island in the Gnarls spinning. Including the one we were standing on. Reeling from the backlash, I dropped to the ground, clinging to the rough cement as the rock Kaufman had made into his battle station world like a top. Normally, that would have been enough to make me lose my pancakes, but what was going on inside me hurt so much I didn't have space for anything else. I'd never had that much power through me before. It had only been a few seconds, but my magic still felt like a snapped rubber band. I hadn't known it was possible to hurt in so many ways. From the darkness dripping into my eyes and the distant clamor of Sybil screaming into my ears, I knew I had to be bleeding bad. But that felt like the least of my worries at the moment. I'd deal with the blood loss later. If there was a later. Right now, it was taking everything I had to keep myself together. Not my body, but what lived inside it. It was funny. I'd been aware of magic for all of my life that I could remember. Most mages didn't come into their power until 9 or 10. But my parents had been determined to breed a prodigy. They'd packed me full of the best genetics and hired a fleet of experts to train me in how to recognize and grasp magic before I could speak. I hadn't been able to actually cast anything until I was 6, but there wasn't a time in my life when the power hadn't been there. Until this moment, though, when it was closer than ever to sputtering out, I'd never realized that the power I could feel constantly inside my head wasn't just a part of being a mage. It was me. My magic. My soul. That should have made me feel even worse about being so bad at using it, but I was too drained to work up the usual bitterness. All I felt was relief that it was still there, flickering inside me. I was cupping my mental hands around it to keep it safe when another pair of hands, real, crushing ones, grabbed me by the shoulders. Even dulled, the pain was enough to knock me out of my stupor. Groggy and reeling, I got my head up just in time to see Kaufman. He was as bloody as I was. His handsome face was a mess, and his whole body was heaving with the aftershocks of the backlash I'd brought down on us both. But even though he had to be as out of it as I was, there was hatred burning in his bloodshot eyes. Real, killing fury that had nothing to do with the business he was always going on about. "Go to hell," he whispered, the words coming out in a spray of blood and spittle as he shoved me with all his might, sending me sliding off the still-spinning rock and into the void beyond.